Welcome to the Eastman Dental Podcast, where we hope to inspire, motivate, and provide education from our guests' experience.
Well, Julia, Fiona really is a hygienist doing things differently.
Yes, I mean, having a mobile dental hygiene service going around Scotland, quite impressive.
And she's got a good business mind as well. She's been named as one of the top 100 female entrepreneurs in Scotland.
And I think that whole sustainability in dentistry, you know, cycling around, providing care for patients, quite inspirational.
And I think there really are some top tips that any of our listeners can use from that episode. And I can't wait for them to hear it.
With your hosts, Josh Hudson and Julia Bruin.
Welcome to the Eastman Dental Podcast, Fiona. It's a real pleasure to have you here today.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, this podcast obviously is a podcast that is a careers podcast. We're interviewing people with inspiring and varied careers, and you certainly fit that bill. And like many of our guests, we try and start right from the beginning and find out where their passion for dentistry started or whether it was something that happened by chance. So what's your starting story?
So 42 years ago, I asked my mum if I could leave school. And she said, yes, if you get a full-time job. The careers advisor said that, did I like helping people? And I said, yes. And I went to Addiscombe Road in East Croydon and started my life as a dental nurse. Jane Day and Jan Mason taught me the trade. There was a fantastic hygienist there called Fanny Tully, and she encouraged me to take a step further to become a hygienist. And I qualified at South Norwood, and Fanny encouraged me to join as a hygienist. And before I knew it, I became a King's Lass. And 36 weeks later, I was working in Brighton as a dental hygienist.
Wow. So, yes, for those listeners, I mean, they might not know that dental hygiene training has gone through such a seismic change. So you did 36 weeks.
I did a year after qualifying as a dental nurse, and I qualified on my 21st birthday. There was a problem with the applications. King's had lost all the applications for the dental hygienist, and it just happened that there was an advert in the Telegraph, of which my father was a reader, saying, could you reapply? And so luckily some people reapplied, and I was one of those lucky people who carved a tooth out of wax at my interview to get in.
No way. So they lost the applications and then they put an advert in the paper to say, if you've applied, and we've lost your application,
can
you
reapply? And not just any newspaper,
yeah.
Wow, what a weird situation. So tell us a little bit more about those early stages. So you went through that relatively short program, qualified as a hygienist. And then what were those early days like for you? What kind of stands out as memories from that time?
So memories I have of my early years in dentistry, first as a dental nurse. Dental nurses were 10 a penny in those days. They started on a Monday, they got kicked out on a Friday. So I really put my head down and worked hard, and soon picked up on the fact that people could save having amalgam MODs drilled through their teeth by brushing. Also, obviously, cross-infection was totally different. I did this all without a mask or gloves. We used to have mercury races across surgical spirit tops. And if I was able to wipe the drill in between patients, I was having a good day. So things have changed since then. I loved King's work when I got into King's, and because we were part of the hospital as well. So we went round the Max Fax wards, very scary consultant, Den, don't ask me a question. But we used to go and help clean teeth on Max Fax wards. I remember one day cleaning around a framework of this lady who I presumed had a bit of surgery on her jaw for aesthetic reasons. And I was chatting away to her and she told me that she'd been smashed on the head by a machete. That's Camberwell for you. During my exam at King's, my patient decided to get up and walk out after about 20 minutes saying he had had enough. So in a good Scottish accent, I just felt like I was doomed.
But obviously that didn't, you know, these experiences that you had either as a dental nurse or during your training, that these things shape you, don't they? They are things that make you the person you are. So what other things happened to you during your early days?
I think the team around you was really important. So I was in this practice and we had just a great team of supportive people who really showed you what dentistry could be about. I then went down to Brighton and was on that conveyor belt of 15-minute appointments. We were seeing children under GA. It was all mad, really. I then had the opportunity of covering someone's maternity leave in Toronto. So I went from 15-minute appointments in Brighton over to Toronto, where I had a patient for an hour.
Toronto, Canada, I'm guessing.
Toronto, Canada. Yeah, so I had this patient for an hour and I was like, what do you do in an hour? Now, an hour is pure bliss, isn't it? That was the first time I ever wore a mask and gloves. And also I was taught to take x-rays as well. So,
How did that come about? So you say you had this opportunity.
I had a British friend who was living out there, and she was on maternity leave.
And she said, "Do you want to come cover?
Do you want to come and cover?" Probably not allowed. Don't tell the GDC.
Did you feel as though it was really? I mean, you've just described the fact that the hour appointment was clearly a difference, but did you feel the patients were different? Did you think the whole environment was very different?
It was just, it just made you realise what you could do. You had time. B, these patients were so motivated. There was no scale. I was like looking for scale rather than getting the Cavitron out and doing 3-3 like you always did in those 15 minutes. It was just, it just made you realise what prevention can do for people.
It's always interesting to hear about the provision of care wherever it is, because we talk about the North-South divide, we talk about, you know, Scotland, England, Wales, all of the countries. And I just think it's just fascinating to hear about working in different environments.
Yeah. No.
And then, yeah, talking about those different environments. So there's differences in countries there, but also over your time as a hygienist, there's I'm sure been lots of changes here as well. What kind of change, you've alluded to some of these already, but what kind of changes have you seen over that time of your career?
Well, obviously, cross-infection has become massive. And, you know, working that first time with gloves was just crazy, wasn't it? I think now, as a dental hygienist, we're listened to more by our principal dentists. For example, I went off to the Perio conference, international Perio conference, and came back and made a proposal of different Perio treatments and costs, and that was taken on board. And when things like that happen for you, I think it just boosts you and you think, yeah, I know what I'm talking about. Yeah, I can do this. So obviously direct access has come through. I still feel that we are undervalued, though. I still feel we are on a conveyor belt with our patients. And it's been very interesting me stepping out of surgery dentist and doing what I'm doing at the moment to realise that you cannot do prevention even in 30 minutes. To get someone to settle down and listen, really listen, and take on board the value of changing a habit cannot be done in 30 minutes. And so I do feel we as a profession need to continue to put that pressure to look at ways. And I think patients are also looking for prevention now. Mm-hmm. We look at prevention for the rest of our body. And from my experience in my new role, I realise that people will pay for prevention as well. So I do think that that's really important. And as we settle into direct access, obviously we always want a bit more. So the need to be able to apply topical anaesthetic and purchase it for our independent practices, all the POM products, that should go through, and hopefully, God willing, that will go through.
Yeah, people are championing those causes currently, aren't they? Let's hope that they do have success.
For sure. What about the patients during that time? I know you said you feel more valued maybe within the profession. What about patients? Because often, historically, patients maybe didn't really know what hygienists did or had any idea about that. Do you think the patients have changed over that time as well?
I still think patients don't fully know what we do. Mm-hmm. And I have definitely found that again within my new role, that people are astounded about what they can do to prevent them having disease. Mm-hmm. And this goes back to the 30-minute conveyor belt. I think we've got to think about these patients. We're all living longer. We're all going to have our own dentition. We're not going to have dentures so much. We're going to have quite complex dental treatment. And who's going to look after that? And that is why one of the reasons I set up Flying Smiles.
And that is prevention, not necessarily operative treatment. Maintaining these things.
Absolutely, absolutely.
For sure.
This is a fascinating career journey you've had, of course, because you were in dentistry, then you've gone away from dentistry, and there was a period in your life when you explored human resources management and did something completely different. So what made that sort of direction change, but probably more importantly, what made you come back to dentistry?
I changed career. I was in dentistry for 5 years, and having plaque and blood literally hit your face because you didn't have masks on, and just felt I wasn't going anywhere. I love food, and I love cooking, and I actually went and did a diploma in home economics thinking that I'd become a home economist, but realised that home economy, like dental hygiene, you are just in one role and you don't move from there. And that's what made me take a step into food retail and human resources. What made me come back to dentistry, it was funny, over the time that I was in retail, I maintained my GDC registration madly and would attend the national conferences with my dear friend Fanny. So I still had that connection. And let me tell you that no employee of mine ever had toothache or got off with days off with toothache. So I always had that want. And after several years in retail, I realised that, you know, there was more to life than having a Tuesday off. Who goes out on a Monday in Brighton? You know, so I decided to leave corporate life. And I, at that time, a lot of dental practices were converting from NHS to private. So I did dabble in helping people understand the customer and caring for the customer and inspiring the customer to buy, as it were. And then I was very lucky to get a job in a dental practice where I did 2 days a week HR and set up all the HR policies and procedures for them. And then I did hygiene for 2 days as well. And so I slowly slipped back into the dental hygiene role.
That sounds really interesting. I mean, we've had on previous episodes of this podcast, we've had dental hygienists who are practice managers as well, and that sort of thing. And I think that seems a very good combination. You've got a lot of the skill set that's required for that sort of role that you are using with your patients. And
absolutely. I mean, it's just being an HR manager or a trainer as well, I just began to understand how to inspire and influence people to change their habits. I do think it's really helped me be impactful on my patients.
So that break away from dentistry really then benefited you when you ultimately ended up coming back then, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, no, definitely.
So you now run your own business, and it's a business with a little bit of a difference. And Julia and I, when we first saw this, we're really excited to hear more about it and find out how it works. And before we really get into that, I was just wondering if you could share with our listeners a little bit more about what you're doing now and why it's different.
So I set up the first in Scotland mobile dental hygienist service. So I come to you to deliver prevention. I do 100% domiciliary. So I go to people's houses, or I set up in a community centre and people come to me, or in a residential home. So I have all mobile equipment. So I have a dental chair that folds out. I have an NSK Viva Ace, which is quite a lightweight mini generator that has got a Pizone scaler, a suction, an aspirator, whatever you say, and a 3-in-1 and a slow handpiece on it. So I can do exactly what I did in the surgery, but do it in your home. So what I found is going to people's houses is that you have more chance of motivating and inspiring people. A, because they've invited you into their home. That's quite a big thing for a lot of people. They are relaxed because they're in their own home. They've not been waiting in a surgery, listening to dentistry in the background, smelling dentistry in the background. They relax on my chair, obviously, and listen to what I'm saying. I can see the way they live. I can see what they use or not use to clean their teeth. I can see that the bathroom is a struggle for them to get into. So let's talk about brushing maybe seated. Let's talk about, you know, children running around. Let's include them in that in the cleaning. And I believe that I have had plaque scores and disease disappear and reduce, plaque scores reduce more than I ever had in surgery. And I do believe it's because they are more relaxed and they are ready to listen. I just think, well, from the feedback that I get from my patients, they all love it. And also you get the little chat as you're setting up, and you get the little chat as you go, as you set off and go away. And so for some people who are maybe quite isolated, it's maybe, you know, I have quite a lot of elderly people that I go and see every 3 months, and they have it on their calendar. They're looking forward to it. They've got the tea and bourbons ready.
And I don't suppose you get many patients who don't turn up.
Well, this I did set a little policy that they had to pay me before I came, because I do live in rural Scotland, and therefore for some people it's the end of a rural road, and I wasn't going to go there and find that they were out, as it were. But for a rural setting, for the farmers, you know, they don't need to come in, wash, get in their tractors and drive an hour into the nearest village. They can literally come out of carving, lie in the chair, have the chat, and then carry on doing what farmers do with carving.
It's very clear that you are enjoying seeing patients in their home, getting really good results and seeing the differences that you can make. But there's clearly some other patient groups that are out there that are excited to receive your treatments and advice. What are those?
So I see patients in residential care, and that can be vulnerable adults as well as children too. And I'm usually invited in by the powers of attorney, or I followed them in. I saw them at their home as they became less mobile and then went into residential care. When I'm in residential care, I usually set up in the hairdressing salon, because most residential care, they have a little treatment room, and see whoever wants to see me there. Usually get the carers involved, watching what I'm doing for brushing. Again, you can go round the care home and see which brushes haven't changed since you were last in. There are some people who are unable to move but are capable, and so therefore, you know, they enjoy me coming and chatting to them. I also go into boarding schools or any group of a community, a group like on the islands. So in boarding schools, children obviously don't have their parents making sure they've brushed for 2 minutes standing over them. So we set up and we look at brushing, and I show the housemaster or the matron how to look after the children in their charge. And also we look at snacks and what we're eating after we've brushed our teeth. So if you think about children in boarding school or in any setting, you know, for them to get to a dental practice, I know when I worked in surgery, if you got the children in, because the holidays became so rammed with everything else they were doing, or parents didn't get themselves organised, so there was never any appointment, it just helps them, again, triage to say this patient needs to get to the dentist, because primary care don't go into boarding schools. Yeah, like they go into
prevention.
And absolutely prevention.
And you are getting to your patients either in hybrid car or cycling there.
Yeah, we have two cargo bikes. Part of the job description for my chaperone or my dental nurse is they have to be able to bike. I'm a great biker. I live in a very lovely area where trail biking is a big thing. Luckily, in my village, the community trust had two cargo bikes sitting in a garage. It was part of my business plan, but they are quite expensive, especially electric ones. But these are actually good old thigh power ones. The community trust have lent them to me, long-term lent me them. So they're actually designed to carry children, you know, the Dutch ones with the big bucket at the front, but they carry our equipment perfectly. And this is great. You go around the village chatting to people. People see you struggling up that hill.
And this is sustainability dentistry right up there, isn't it? I mean, you couldn't get any more sustainable than what you're doing.
Well, one could argue that, yes, that's
well,
right.
Totally. I think it's something to champion.
Yeah, I love the planet. I just think we are on the edge of a climate crisis, and all the time we get in our car to go anywhere, and we live this busy, busy life where we do need to get in our car to pop down and get that packet of crisps or whatever, rather than we need to slow down and start walking and biking, and it's good for us and it's good for the planet. So if as I build up my, these bikes, as I say, aren't electric, so I do have to, I can only do it within my village. Luckily, I live in quite a flat village, so it's not too bad, but it's great. And obviously, then the community see you, and everybody knows me as that dental person. And so people do come and ask me questions and ask me advice and things like that as well. So you then become your, they call it community wealth building. People know that you're part of the community, you're caring for the community, and that's all sustainable as well.
And really making a difference to people's lives. I mean, this is really making a difference.
Absolutely, absolutely. We need more of it out there.
Well, that was what I was thinking when I was hearing all of that. Just where do you start with organizing that, like you've already said, this isn't something that's happening a lot. You can't go out and say, oh, there's this already set up, I can just dial into that, done, everything's ready. So where do you even start with getting that set up, with the equipment, with the health and safety aspects? There must be loads of different things that you need to consider as part of that.
I don't think I realised how much there was to consider. But I read the regulations and I reread the regulations, and it didn't say that I couldn't do it. And in Scotland, we have something called the Healthcare Improvement Scotland, which is our CQC. And they didn't say, oh, no, you couldn't do that. So I did it. I worked part time and I put together all the procedures and policies. Again, you know, we need a union as independent hygienists. You guys in dentistry have the BDA and they've got all the procedures and policies. You just need to download them we don't have that. We have to do some little bit of copying. So yes, it was a lot of work. I didn't realise how much work there was going to be involved. And then it all builds up to the good old practice inspection, which of I don't have a practice, obviously. But I do, at the time when I first started, I converted my cupboard under the stairs into my sterilising room. So I made the decision to have a sterilising area. I am now encouraging people that come to me for advice, and I have coached people to go mobile, is maybe keep a link with your dental practice, A, because you can triage to them, but also you can utilise their sterilising room. But I didn't do that because I'm eccentric like that. I want to do it on my own. And I set up this. So the inspection was of that. So I invited them. We sat in the community centre and they went through all my procedures and policies. And then they came and had a look at my LDU. And off I flew, as it were.
And, you know, keeping with that flying theme, you know, we touched on the fact that what you're doing is, you know, sustainability at its best. Do you think that actually there's anything that we should be doing, all of us, you know, give anybody out there listening, you know, a bit of food for thought, perhaps?
I think we need to get our heads out of our patients' mouths and look around us. And that means getting out of our bricks and mortar. That's the American saying for our practices, and get out into our communities. If we go out, there are so many people. What is it? I think it's 39%, and this was 2018, of people do not attend a dental practice regularly. And if you look at the addresses of your patients, I bet they come from miles away. So everybody is driving a car to your practice, one at a time, parking up and being seen by you. Why not go out? And what I do, I go to the islands and rural Scotland, and I set up in a community centre, and people come to me there, and I can then triage if people need work or don't need work. In America, they are doing exactly that. They have big, nice big trucks that they go out into rural area, and the American insurance companies are now paying for a dental hygienist to go out into rural countryside, do an oral health assessment, take some photos, take some x-rays. They can then send that to the affiliated dentist, who can then sign it off or invite that person in for treatment, rather than that person having to go maybe 50, 100 miles for a checkup. So people don't go. We're losing people rather than gathering people. And if we think about COVID, more people stay at home. More people that I am now meeting are people who have started working from home, but they went to their dentist where they worked, so they've stopped going. I've seen people who are just a little bit more reluctant about going out. And of course, I don't know whether we're allowed to call it an NHS crisis, but in Scotland, we are where England was maybe 20 years ago, with everybody turning their back on the NHS. And so people are either waiting longer for appointments or are travelling miles, which is fine if you've got a car, but who misses out? It's those people who've got to get public transport. So let's get out there. And as a hygienist or a therapist, I mean, I'm only a dental hygienist.
Oh, we never say only.
No, but sorry, as a dental therapist,
we never say just only, because we're all out there, aren't we? I think those just and only words need to be banished from our profession. We ought to be proud of our registered qualifications.
Absolutely. As a hygienist, but as a therapist, what could you do, you know, what you could do without having to even get the come to a dental practice? And so that's another thing. I'm meeting families. Children have never been in a surgery. You know, parents don't. So kids, if they did have to go for treatment, it would just be wild, you know. So I'm encouraging them to sit on the chair, polish granny's teeth or whatever we do together. And hopefully that, if that child ever ends up in a dental practice, they'll feel more comfortable about it as well. So I just feel we could do so much.
That must give you a wonderful feeling at the end of your working day.
My bucket is overflowing.
Yes, and so it should. I think that's a wonderful, wonderful thing that you're doing.
I think, yeah, that I hadn't even thought about those patients that are difficult to access. You think about kind of domiciliary visits as, you know, patients that are housebound, literally can't get out. But the sustainability aspect of people that live far away from dental practices is something that we might not even be thinking about. So I think it's really interesting that you've shared that, and our listeners can think about that, that it's not necessarily just, you know, elderly housebound people that need this service.
Absolutely not. I met a gentleman who had unfortunately had a stroke, so wasn't able to drive anymore. And we tried to find him a dental practice that he could go to on public transport. We were trying to find him an NHS dental practice, which was impossible, but actually to find one that was close enough on public transport, because the public transport system, it's great here in London. You can get a bus anywhere. Mm. But in Scotland, you're waiting for a couple of hours in the rain to get anywhere. Yeah. So it's, yeah, we could do so much more.
And I think the other thing that you're doing alongside your visiting your patients outside is that you are really making an impact on the sort of items that patients might be using. So you're trying to reduce the amount of plastic that, you know, may be featuring in these dental bathrooms of our patients.
Yes.
Because, you know, there is a lot that is being thrown away, being done. So talk us through that bit.
Yeah. So when I set up Flying Smiles, my objective was to be sustainable. So I had an eco-friendly shop. And I started off and I found bamboo interspace brushes and you name it, bamboo this, bamboo that, cotton floss. And it's interesting how as you get more and more into the subject, do you discover, is that good? Where's the bamboo grown? Mm. How is it grown? Who grows it? Where is it shipped from? So I was buying this bamboo interspace brush from New Zealand. Now, I bet it was done in China in a fossil fuel factory. Mm. So my journey in my eco-friendly shop has gone in full circle, because now I recognise that there are European companies that have turned their back on fossil fuels and are producing biodegradable toothbrushes in Europe and shipping them and therefore reducing the carbon footprint from there. And that's even the same with floss. Think about cotton, eco-friendly floss. Think about all those cotton plants or silkworms working hard. Are they being looked after? Or do they get a living wage?
Yeah.
And so I'm back to maybe we should use plastic floss, because that's all we've got at the moment. I know TP have just recently brought out a biodegradable floss. But why don't we rinse it? We rinse our toothbrush. If you're using a floss tape, you could rinse it, hang it over your toothbrush and use it again. Mm. You know, so we've got to think about just consuming less and what we do. But the bottom line is prevention. Prevention. Because if we stop having treatment, and treatment has a huge carbon footprint. So if we could get out there and prevent people having treatment, then we're not going to have that carbon footprint of treatment. I'm not, you know, we're always going to need treatment, so I'm not dissing you dentists, but I just feel we can look after so much more. And I was recently chatting to an A&E nurse, and she said the amount of people that have come into A&E with sepsis due to untreated wisdom teeth or
dental related
is just huge. So think about the carbon footprint. That person drives to the hospital. We're then using all the facilities in there. Then they get drug, you know, antibiotics or whatever. It's all just adds to the carbon footprint. So prevention.
Which sort of brings me on to a question that we've asked a few of our guests, and it's about having messages for the whole dental world to see, isn't it? It's about having a billboard in the middle of Piccadilly Circus in central London where lots of people are going to see this message. Have you got any thoughts about what message you'd put up on that?
I have. So for the dental people, I want to say, why get stuck in your surgery with your head down? Look up and get out and see the people that really need you. So for the general public, I'd say it's easy. Just brush your teeth for 2 minutes plus. Maybe change your head regularly, your toothbrush regularly, but just brush. I am a great advocate of brushing. If you get your brushing right, then all the rest falls into place. So I do spend a lot of time showing people how to brush and encouraging them to brush for 2 minutes plus.
So we've talked about the journey up until this point, and we've talked about all the different things that have happened in your career and the setting up of this innovative setup in Scotland. But what's the future for Flying Smiles? Where do you envisage things going from here? Is this something that you're hoping is going to become wider than your area? Or what are the aims going forward?
When I set up the business, I didn't think about, I was just doing it for my bucket, really, selfishly. But what has come to light is that, especially in Scotland, I'm speaking for, there is a lot of space. Rural Scotland has a lot of need. We call it service deprived areas. So there are people there who are wanting and financially able, but they just don't have the services around them. Do I want to start setting up franchises? I struggle with that because I'm me and I want it done my way. So it's letting go.
And you know, people come to see you, don't they? They don't come to see the franchise.
Yeah.
That's the thing about dentistry.
But just recently, because I've been going to the islands, the Outer Hebrides, and I now have a map on my wall with all the islands on it, and I'm putting stickers on each island that I adventure to. And when I was on the island last time, I met a therapist who had just qualified. Her husband had got a job with the MOD, so she'd moved with him, but obviously can't work. So watch this space. She's one of the students who hasn't ever been in dentistry before. So we're going to start with a bit of decontamination and stuff. But watch this space. I think I would be more comfortable in coaching other people and maybe giving them what I'm putting together at the moment is something I call a digital box. And in that box is all the links to all the things that you need to set up to go mobile. And I will be charging for that box, but you have that box, you go away and do what you want with that rather than becoming a big corporate blob.
So the concept, not necessarily the brand itself.
Yeah.
This is certainly an inspiring career journey that you've just described. And there will be many people listening to this podcast who will have no desire to do what you've done, but maybe on the early stages of their career or the latter stages of their career, and are always fascinated to hear about the person that we're interviewing and about their earlier self and what sort of lessons they've learned and what they would say to themselves if they had that time again as an early career person.
I feel that I wouldn't, there isn't anything that I would do differently, as it were. I did one at one point think, I want to be a dentist, but I don't think I was inspired enough at school as a woman to do dentistry at my age. But now I look back and I don't feel like that. So I would say to my early self, you know, grab that opportunity, be adventurous, but also don't think that doing a repetitive job is boring. Take hold of that repetitiveness, she says, getting her teeth in, and utilise as you get quicker at a certain thing to maybe add something to your appointment that will really benefit the patient. So that's one of the things that I would say to myself. I would say make sure you exercise regularly and find that thing that gets you out into nature and into making your heart beat, as it were. And finally, I would say to my younger self, consume less. You don't need to have everything. You don't need to look amazing. We sometimes go, perfection is a mistake, I feel. Just enjoy the journey. Love yourself. Love what you've got. And make sure that if you need something else, where did it come from? How was it manufactured? How long will it last? Consume less.
Well, what a wonderful way to end. Thank you so much, Fiona, for joining us on the podcast. And I'm sure lots of people will be inspired by your story.
Yes, thank you so much for coming on, Fiona. It's been great to hear you.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
If you've been inspired by that episode, did you know that the Eastman Dental Hospital Education Centre provide training for the whole dental team? Follow us on social media or search for the Eastman Dental Hospital Education Centre to find out more.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode. We would love to hear your suggestions for future guests. Remember to follow us on social media using hashtag the Eastman Dental Podcast. And if you like what you hear, please like, share, subscribe, and listen out for future episodes.